This is an audiobook presentation of Public Enemy Zero by Andrew Main. Public Enemy Zero is available for only $1 at the Amazon Kindle store or via the Kindle app on all major tablets and smartphones, including iPads, iPhones, Blackberries, Windows 7, and Android. It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook store and Apple's iBooks. Or you can get a complete, uninterrupted copy of this audiobook at andrewmain.com/books. Chapter 5. Mitchell found a parking spot two blocks away from Rachel's apartment and pulled in. He'd become somewhat adept at sleeping in his car. When Rachel had asked him to leave, he told her with foolish pride that he had some other place to stay. The other place was his old Toyota. A friend of his helped him eventually find a small place in a former retirement community. It was a virtual ghost town where most of the residents were shut-ins or absentee owners, holding out for property prices to go back up. The rest of the units were in foreclosure. In the 3 weeks he'd been living there, he could recall seeing another neighbor maybe three times, and always at a distance. Afraid of anybody under the age of 60, they'd scurry back into their apartments and lock their doors. For Mitchell, the lack of neighborly contact wasn't a bad thing. He'd kept such odd hours, it really didn't make a difference. Another upside for him was that the complex was next to a grocery store, accustomed to dealing with the elderly and homebound people. He could order anything he wanted online and have it waiting at his doorstep when he got home. That alone kept him from starving while he'd been sick for the past few weeks. He unfolded the sunshade and placed it in his windshield to keep the morning sun out of his eyes. It was cool enough now that, with the windows cracked, he could turn off the engine and not worry about suffocating from the Florida sun. His after-work meal consisted of a bottle of iced tea, a stick of beef jerky, and a power bar he'd bought at a gas station by the radio station. The meal had become such a routine that the old Haitian man who worked at the station would place the items into a tray as soon as he saw Mitchell's car pull up. Mitchell would drop his money into the slot and get his change, never having any kind of exchange other than a friendly nod. Still feeling a little bit anxious about what happened the night before, he'd pulled out his iPhone. He opened up a browser window to pull up the local newspaper, spent several minutes reading the crime bulletins, looking for anything that might refer to the incident the night before. Nothing came up that sounded like what happened. There was the usual shoplifting, DUI, domestic disputes, but other than that, it looked like nothing else had been reported. Although that didn't mean she hadn't filed a police report, Mitchell felt better knowing that it wasn't front-page news and there was no active manhunt out to get him. With that little bit of peace, Mitchell pulled the lever on his seat and leaned back to go to sleep. Mitchell was awoken by the angry bee buzz of his iPhone as a text message popped up on the screen. It was from Rachel. "What the fuck? Are you dropping them off or not?" He'd forgot to set the alarm, and now he had to deal with the pissed-off wrath of Rachel. There was a time when she could make him feel good about himself, and like a complete asshole. Now it was all asshole, all the time. His chance to drop off the keys and act like it was all no big thing was shot, because he knew she was going to read his hesitancy like he was still holding out for things to go back to the way they were. He yawned, then typed in a reply. "Sorry. Overslept. Almost there." A moment later, she texted back. "How long? About to take a shower after Rick." "For fuck's sake. Why did you have to add that? He felt the knife go into his side." Intellectually, he knew it was her way of saying not to make the thing into something stupid and awkward. It still hurt. For a fleeting moment, he had a childish idea of texting back. "Got to drive girlfriend to work. Can't stay to talk." But he knew she'd just say something positive about him having a new girlfriend and have the upper hand back. He thought one way to make her doubt herself would be to tell her that she was seeing another guy. She'd write back and say that she always knew he was gay, but secretly feel inadequate. Or at least he imagined she would. That was a horrible idea, he realized. Since the passenger side door didn't reliably lock, he took his backpack with him and headed toward the apartment. He could smell the ocean air as a breeze swept by. He had missed living that close to the ocean. Not that he ever went there all that much. It was just nice knowing it was near. He'd slept through the morning rush hour. The streets were empty of life, except a woman across the way, struggling with two dogs and a delivery truck that flew by. When Rachel's apartment building came into view, he felt a little butterfly in his stomach. He panicked for a moment, thinking he forgot her keys. That would have been great, showing up at her doorstep without him. He could only imagine how big of an asshole she'd make him feel like if that happened. On the first floor, he looked at the apartment where the two little boys live with their mother. Mitchell used to sit out there and play Transformers with them after school while they waited for their mom to get home. He'd been meaning to stop by and say hello, but he never got around to it. He reached the foot of the stairs leading up to her apartment and paused. Could he time it so her new boyfriend was in the shower? The last thing he wanted to see was another guy standing there in the apartment, filling the role he used to fill. Worse was the idea of meeting this guy and finding out that he was better looking and younger than him. Rachel was 5 years younger than Mitchell, which wasn't a big gap. But the idea that she broke up with him partly because of his age was a nagging feeling he had. He did a slow walk up the stairs and pulled open the screen door to knock. In his mind, he'd rehearse what he was about to say. She'd ask him how he'd been. He'd leave out the part about being sick because he knew it would only make him sound even more pathetic. Instead, he'd tell her that he'd been busy with the radio station stuff and tell a little white lie about getting an offer to go to a bigger station in a bigger market. He knew she'd say that he should take the job to either call his bluff on the lie if she already saw through it or to get him as far away from her as possible. He'd already thought of a follow-through for that while he was homesick on his couch. He would reply that he loved South Florida and the station was thinking about putting him on earlier in the day, like early enough that she would be driving home from work, turn on her radio, and accidentally flip to his station and hear his voice. He grinned at the idea of her being afraid to turn on the radio at the risk of feeling remorseful about the breakup, or better yet, have his face up on billboards around town. His grin faded when the sad reality that it was a fantasy brought him crashing down to earth. He'd been lucky to still have a job in 3 months. An earlier time slot when people who weren't insomniacs or alcoholics was more far-fetched than any one of Rookman's conspiracies. Rachel's dog began barking from behind the door. You could hear footsteps, and then Rachel's voice yelled at the dog. From behind the door, she called out, "Hold on, Mitch!" He could hear her undo the chain and then unlock the deadbolt. She opened the door, and a wave of longing swept over Mitchell as he saw how he'd seen her 100 other mornings in her shorts and tank top, a little sleepy, but radiant and beautiful. She gave him a half smile. The smile turned into a snarl. He'd seen that expression before, but never on Rachel. That was the look the mad girl last night had given him before she tried to rip out his throat. Rachel's eyes opened wide, and her mouth seemed to unhinge. She lunged forward at Mitchell and let out a scream so shrill he felt his knees go weak. Chapter 6. Mitchell took a step back as Rachel leaped forward. Her fingers came at his chest, clawing like an animal. His right foot overstepped on the stairs, and he stumbled backwards. He felt the railing with his right hand and clung to it so he didn't fall down the steps. One of Rachel's hands grabbed his shirt and yanked at it. He could feel the elastic neckband burn against his neck as she pulled. His trip had accidentally helped him stay out of her reach. Rachel overshot where she stood and fell down the edge of the stairs with the upper half of her body hanging over them. The aluminum railing made for a gong-like sound as her spine hit it. Frustrated and furious, she let out a scream and started kicking at his shins. Rachel jumped up, spreading his legs to avoid the blows. "Rach?" he started to ask. He was trying to understand what was happening. Had she fell? Was it like the night before? All he could do was react. She looked at him and reached a hand down toward his belt and tried to pull him toward her. The hand slid and landed on his ankle. Mitchell yanked his foot away and reflexively stomped on it, pinning it to the ground. Rachel's left foot hit him in the knee and let her hand go. She was beginning to pull herself up. Mitchell looked at the open door. Did he try to make it inside and lock her out? Just then, a male voice called out from inside.
What the fuck is going on?
Mitchell ran down the stairs in two bounds. Rachel got up and chased after him. He rounded the edge of the complex and headed down to the sidewalk. He could hear her running behind him. They used to jog together. He was the faster sprinter while she had better stamina. Behind him, he heard the pace quickening. He was gaining. He made a quick left and down to a shortcut he used to take. Rachel overshot it before turning around. He could hear her snarling behind him. Mitchell ran down the gap between the buildings and took another turn. He'd made some distance from her, but she was still gaining on the straight anyway. Across the street, she could see an apartment complex with a white metal gate between an alley. The gate was open. If he could reach the gate, he could close it and separate Rachel from him, at least temporarily. Mitchell ran up the steps and jumped through the entrance. He shut the gate and Rachel's body slammed into it. The latch had no lock, so he had to hold it together with his hands. Rachel pulled at the bars and screamed. Her eyes widened as they saw where his knuckles were vulnerable on the outside of the bars. Her mouth snapped at his fingers, trying to bite them off. Mitchell pulled his hand free, and her head slammed into the metal bars. She furiously banged her head against the gate, then she tried to bite his other hand. What the hell? Mitchell moved his hand to another part of the gate, then tried to hold it shut. How long could he do that before she bit one of his fingers off? He hoped somebody would call for help soon. The entire neighborhood had to hear her screaming and the sound of her body thrashing against the gate. He could hear the sound of somebody running down the alley. Her boyfriend, Rick, ran into the street. Still in his boxers, he was Mitchell's height, but much more athletic. He looked over at them and came charging. Rick let out a guttural cry, leaped up the small set of stairs and slammed into the gate with his shoulders. The concrete fitting where the gate was bolted began to crack. Bits of painted plaster fell away in chips. Rachel stretched her hands through the gate and tried to claw at Mitchell's throat. He let go of the gate entirely and stepped back. Rick charged at the gate again. Mitchell could hear the sound of metal bending. Mitchell looked at them confused. Their eyes were bloodshot and their teeth bared all the way to the gums. Something was going to give. He could either stay there and wait for help to come, or use what time he had before they bothered to just unscrew the latch and come for him. Screw it. Mitchell ran down the alley and hopped over the low wooden fence that separated it from the service road in the back of the complex. He spotted a large trash can and pushed it in front of the fence. It might trip one of them up if they didn't see it. He headed up the service alley and came to a cross street. A car drove by. He tried to flag it down. It kept on going. From behind, he heard the sounds of aluminum hitting the ground. The crashing gate echoed down the canyon of buildings that lined the service road. Mitchell turned around to see Rick leap over the fence and pass right over the trash can. Fuck. Rick looked to his right, then to his left, and started right at Mitchell. He pumped his arms and came at him like a sprinter out of the starting blocks. Mitchell ran down the street, not caring about traffic. He ran straight down the middle. His best hope was to spot a cop or someone who could help. Already in pain, his body was crying out to stop. He could feel a bile building up in the back of his throat. He couldn't keep this up much longer. The only thing that kept him going was the thought of what would happen if Rick caught up with him. The sound of bare feet hitting the pavement was getting louder. Rick was letting out the large puffs of air sprinters sometimes do when they're trying to use their lungs as a muscle to push themselves forward. A smaller set of footprints was further back. Rachel was following them. Mitchell heard a scream right behind his ear. Something reached out and touched his backpack. The adrenaline gave him a burst of energy. For a brief moment, he felt something of a high. He reached another intersection. A car was driving across it. Fuck it. It was going to be close. Mitchell jumped. He could feel the wind of the car. The driver slammed on the brakes as Mitchell flew past his windshield. The driver turned to watch as Mitchell kept running. He never saw another man run into his car at full speed. The front bumper sent Rick flying into the ground. There was a snap as his right leg broke from the impact. Mitchell turned around and saw Rick crumpled on the asphalt. His leg was at a funny angle. Rick was still staring right at Mitchell. He struggled to his feet and fell down. Blood spurted from where the bone stuck out of his skin. Rachel ran around the corner and blew right past Rick as he struggled to get up. She never looked back. The fear, the adrenaline, it all went numb as Mitchell saw Rachel ignore Rick as she dodged between him and the car without missing a beat. Mitchell ran down the next service road. He immediately took a turn right through an alley and towards his car. He'd hoped this would confuse Rick when she got to the service road. On one side of the alley was a wooden maintenance shack. He ran around the back and waited. He could hear footsteps as Rachel raced to where she last saw him. They grew louder, then passed where he was hiding. Should he call for help now? He reached for his iPhone, then froze when he heard another sound. It wasn't as fast as Rachel, but it was definitely footsteps. Near the entrance to the service road, he could hear a footfall and the sound of something being dragged. Step, drag, step, drag. Rick? Mitchell decided to brake for his car and call for help from there. He rushed down the alley and onto the street where he parked his car. He prayed that Rachel didn't decide to emerge from the service road as he ran by. Finally, he reached his car. He opened the passenger side door and slid in as he caught his first relieved breath of air. A tire squeak made him jump. He slid away the sunshade as a parking enforcement official pulled up in her three-wheeled cart to ticket the car in front of Mitchell. Thank God for meter maids, thought Mitchell, as he got out of the car to ask for help. Chapter 7. Mitchell went to open his mouth. He hyperventilated as he tried to think of what to say. The parking enforcement official, a middle-aged, stocky Hispanic woman, was typing something into her handheld computer. "Excuse me," Mitchell called out. She looked up at him from the other car. It was a defensive expression she'd shown 1,000 times to people who thought they could plead for a break. She just looked at Mitchell and raised an eyebrow. No, how can I help you? Or anything resembling courtesy. I'm being chased by 2 people. I think they're trying to kill me. He made a conscious choice not to say ex-girlfriend and her new boyfriend. Mitchell looked over his shoulder. He wasn't sure if he was more frightened about seeing Rachel running toward him with murder in her eyes, or Rick slowly plodding along with his bloody mess of a leg and bone poking through. The officer walked to the driver's side of Mitchell's car and looked at him from across the hood. She could see the terror in Mitchell's eyes. There was a fleeting moment of humanity. Mitchell tried to figure out how to explain what had just happened, but even he didn't understand it. The woman reached for her radio. Then her face lost all expression. Oh, fuck, thought Mitchell. The woman's lips pulled back as she bared her teeth. Passenger side door still open. Mitchell leaped back in and slammed it shut. The officer jumped onto his hood and started slamming the radio into his windshield as she screamed. Fuck, 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 he shouted. He looked over at the driver's side. He started to climb into it when he heard the windshield crack from the impact of the radio. He looked back out and saw the radio break apart as it made a hole the size of a soda can in the glass. The parking enforcement officer reached a hand through the opening, scraping the skin of her knuckles, and grabbed Mitchell's hair. She started to yank it. Mitchell whipped his head back. Her bloody fingers still held onto clumps of his hair. She leaned back out of his reach. Red, polished nails flew past his face. Did he try to start the car and drive off with her on it? Could he even drive with her trying to rip his face off through the windshield? Fumbled his keys from his pocket, shoved them into the ignition from the passenger side. Tried to pull the car from park to reverse so he could throw her free. Fuck! Forgot he needed to press the brake pedal to do that. Mitchell tried to reach under her arm, and as it swung through the hole like an angry snake looking for something to strike. His left hand felt a pedal. He pushed it. The engine revved up. Damn it! He pushed the other pedal on his right hand, tried to pull the shifter. Crack! Mitchell looked as pieces of flying glass began to rain down on him. The parking official was trying to squeeze her round body through the opening she'd just made larger. Her right shoulder and head were coming through the glass. Mitchell pulled himself back into the passenger side. The stout woman tried pushing through as her left hand pounded the outside of the windshield. It was a mess of crackling glass and bloody handprints. Her eyes kept staring at him, never looking away. Crack! The window blew apart and showered small pieces of broken safety glass everywhere. She placed a hand on the window frame and pulled her body towards Mitchell. His right hand found the door handle and pulled on it. Mitchell fell out of the car and onto the ground. The woman climbed all the way into the car. On impulse, he slammed the door shut and kicked it closed. Still on all fours, he crawled backwards over the glass to the sidewalk. The woman slammed her face against the passenger window and let out a scream. Bloodshot eyes tore into him. She began beating on the window with bloody fists as she pounded her head into the glass. Her face was crisscrossed with lacerations. More blood was visible than skin. Mitchell knew he couldn't stay there. He was certain she was either going to break through the glass or just open the goddamn door when she calmed down for a second. Parking officers carry guns? He wondered. He looked to his left and then to his right. Somewhere out there, Rachel and Rick were still trying to hunt for him. The woman in his car started kicking at the window. Fearful of getting cornered by Rachel, Rick, or the parking officer, Mitchell got to his feet and started running towards a more populated part of town. Maybe someone could tell him why people were acting so crazy. He ran down the street and crossed several intersections without looking. He ran up another street to put him out of the line of sight of the parking woman. As he bolted through another intersection, a car honked at him. That normal human reaction made him feel slightly better. When he got to a safe place, he could call the police and try to find out what was going on. How come 4 out of the last 7 people he talked to in the last 24 hours tried to kill him? He wasn't a spy. Didn't have any secrets. What the fuck? A mile away from his car, he started to slow down his pace. He needed a place to think and sort things out before he called the police. He had no idea what to tell them. Every time he tried to think about what happened, he felt disconnected, like he was watching someone else's bad dream. Rachel's face was something out of a nightmare. Nothing made sense. He did the only thing he could. Keep moving forward. Up ahead, he saw the mall where he would sometimes go and hang out while Rachel was at work. He picked up his pace and hurried there. He knew he'd feel much more safe in some place public, somewhere people could help him if Rachel, Rick, or the parking woman came after him. Mitchell jogged past the half-full parking lot and went through the sliding glass doors. Safety in numbers, he thought. Chapter 8. Mitchell headed straight from the entrance and towards the food court. Under the skylight, surrounded by a dozen different fast food places, he knew he would feel less alone, less vulnerable. This is where he went when Rachel told him it was over, and he didn't have any friends to talk to. The mall was where he went for a sense of normal. He walked briskly past the shops and kiosks. The smell of orange chicken and French fries told him he was getting closer. He pulled out his iPhone and sat down at the table on the outskirts of the food court. A few tables away, a woman knocked over her drink as she tried to reach across the table to feed her baby in its high chair. She got up to get some napkins to clean the mess. He looked at the lines of people forming at the counters during their lunch break. Hunger began to overtake all his other instincts as his stomach let out a growl. He ignored it and stared at his locked phone screen. He'd removed the photo of Rachel after she'd broken up with him. He tried to swipe the unlock, but his finger was still shaking from all the adrenaline and anxiety. He tried again and unlocked it. He pressed the phone icon and began typing 911 into the keypad. His finger paused over the call button. How would he explain what was happening to the calm voice on the other side? He wouldn't tell them about the girl the night before. That would only complicate things. Should he tell them that Rick was trying to kill him and leave out Rachel entirely? His story sounded better that way. What should he say about the meter maid? His stomach turned into a knot when he realized the woman he had just ran from was effectively the police. Fuck. I'm a fugitive of the police. The words slipped off his tongue as the severity of it all went way beyond the immediate implications of people trying to kill him. Had he broken any laws in trying to get away? How fucked up would that be? He heard another faint growl. He looked at his stomach. He didn't feel hungry at that point. He heard the growl again. It was coming from off to the side. Mitchell looked toward the direction of the sound. The baby in his high chair was staring right at him. Its mouth was wide open, revealing little teeth and pink gums. The child's tiny bloodshot eyes were locked on Mitchell. It let out another growl as it creased its forehead and squinted its eyes. Mitchell slid his iPhone back into his pocket and just watched. The baby began to rock in its high chair, letting out its animal groan. It gnashed its teeth and rocked harder. It let out a shrill scream. Mitchell was afraid the child was going to tip over. Instinct told him to go help it. Other instincts, more primal than his protective mammal ones, told him to stay clear. The child rocked the high chair so hard it slid a few inches across the tile floor. The baby reached out a hand and clawed at the air. It clawed again and tried to grab Mitchell from 20 feet away. Mitchell jerked back in his seat, as if the baby was going to somehow manage to reach from across the distance. Little pearl-sized teeth tore at the air as snot and spit began to run down the baby's face and spill onto its coveralls. It rocked its chair another few inches toward Mitchell. It began to pull at the restraints and struggled to get free, while never looking away. Mitchell remained motionless, as if his very inactivity would make him invisible. The child looked at him and growled. Mitchell slid his chair away from the table. In that moment, his worst fear was that if he ran or walked away, the child would tip over, and everyone would see the child sprawled out and crying on the ground as Mitchell tried to get away. Child rocked the chair back and bumped the table in back of it. If it got much more momentum, it was going to be over. Frozen in panic, Mitchell didn't know what to do. His social instincts told him to stay and make sure the baby didn't hurt itself. The hatred in the child's eyes, as it continued to stare him down, told him he had to run. Baby was getting more frustrated. It hissed at Mitchell and let out a shrill scream that rang out through the food court. The mother, who was getting napkins in front of a Chick-fil-A, looked up at her baby. The entire food court looked toward the child. Its tiny hand reached out again, clawing the air, reaching towards Mitchell. Mother traced the path with her eyes and where the baby was reaching. Its small, claw-like hand was pointing directly toward Mitchell as it convulsed and shook, trying to throw the whole high chair over. The mother started running. Mitchell slid his chair back. His mind raced for an explanation. The baby rocked and snarled. The woman knocked over another woman as she threaded through the tables toward her child. She changed direction. He felt his blood drain as he realized the woman wasn't running toward her child. She was running straight towards Mitchell. The entire food court's attention began to shift from the furious infant and towards the mother. People dressed in slacks and skirts, ties and blouses with little keycard IDs attached to their clothes began to ignore what they were doing and look at the scene. Cashiers looked away from their registers. Chefs looked up from hot tables. They looked at the mother and the angry baby and looked straight at Mitchell. Mitchell could hear trays and drinks hit the floor. He looked away from the mother to the crowd. All eyes were directly on him. Red eyes. First the mother, who was seconds away, screamed out. Then a tall black man in a tracksuit shrieked. Then 100 more screams let out as the entire food court let loose like a pack of wild apes in a fury. In a wave-like motion, the crowd went from a standing position to a full sprint as they started running towards Mitchell. This is an audiobook presentation of Public Enemy Zero by Andrew Main. Public Enemy Zero is available for only $1 at the Amazon Kindle store or via the Kindle app on all major tablets and smartphones, including iPads, iPhones, BlackBerries, Windows 7, and Android. It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook store and Apple's iBooks. Or you can get a complete, uninterrupted copy of this audiobook at andrewmain.com/books.